Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez. It's
Saturday night, and I'm just hanging out. Down to the nightclub. If you got the dough, the liquor will flow. That's what he wrote. It's the truth. No doubt about that. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing. Coming to you live on Vive TV. Take it back, delayed on Vive TV. We hope to get a live broadcast going on Vive TV. Right now, the WBC TV is in its infancy. Of course, we launched it last week at the 59th annual WBC convention in Mexico City. Of course, it was a tremendous success. Pedro wasn't there. Of course, I lied. I told the passport people that I had dying relatives. I mean, COVID had wiped out the entire family. You name it. I tried every excuse I could. The feds were not believing any of my jive. They just weren't going for it. Okay. I even called Dianne Feinstein. I used to guard her when I was a cop. I used to park outside of her house during the Presidio, park right outside of her house. Richard Blum, I believe, was her husband. He used to come out and wave at us. Never offered me any water, coffee, nothing like that. But Mrs. Feinstein, I only saw her a couple times. Anyway, I used to guard her at the Presidio, and I brought this up in the conversation with her aide trying to get me a passport to Mexico City, okay? A last-minute passport. Didn't happen. They said to me, you've got to have, like, paperwork saying she's dying or dead, one or the other. I said to myself, I could probably forward something up, but I ain't got enough time. So I let it go. So bottom line is, next year, the WBC convention will be in Kazakhstan. I will be there without a doubt, and I will have a passport hopefully before then. Now, we go from passports and Mexico City to being in studio with my man, Primetime Eddie Croft, of course, a WBC regional champion, 122 pounds. Primetime, I love having you here because I'm really proud of you as a father and a coach and a community guy and the whole nine yards. Don't take this as me blowing smoke up your skirt or anything like that. I truly am.
Thank you, Pedro. You know what? I really appreciate that coming from you, especially. You know what? We didn't have any angst or anything, in the past. It was something that you looked at something one way, and I felt like it was another way, and it was okay.
Well, I was a very opinionated journalist. I mean, well, I wouldn't have won those awards that I won if I'd been a golly gee whiz milquetoast type of guy.
No, absolutely, and not only are you a very opinionated journalist, you actually are blunt to the point, and you write for and say things for a little bit of shock value, and it's awesome.
But you have to. I mean, I remember one time I was writing pieces, and I take them back. The high school principal was a drunk, and he had been arrested twice for DUI. And I had the reports. I had the police reports on South City, South San Francisco Police. Tom Gaffney was the principal. So I took the police reports to my journalism teacher, and he said to me, yeah, well, you can print them, but you got to have big B-A-L-L-S in order to do this, because they're going to be coming after you, man, big time after this. I said, no, do it anyway. So we did it, and that was sort of like that launched my, as far as like getting in teeth first into things. From that point forward, I haven't been scared. I mean, I remember one time Don King called me on the phone and said to me, he swore for like a minute, 2 minutes, to all these mothers and this kind of stuff coming out. And he said, is this Pedro? Yeah. so I've had my fun. There's been ups and downs. Now, you're training out of B Street Boxing down there in San Mateo, California. B Street's rocking and rolling. You've got the little B Street gym. Tell me about that. How did you get going? What made you? Most fighters are spitty trainers. When I say spitty on the show, I say spitty instead of the P, it should be an H there, okay? But right. You know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Bottom line is, most fighters are spitty trainers. What makes you so different? You're pretty good.
Well, I don't know if you remember how I got into boxing.
Karate.
Yeah, exactly. So I started boxing relatively late. I was 17 years old already. But I'd been training in martial arts and karate since I was 5 years old. And in the way martial arts schools are structured are, everybody who is a level above, helps the levels below. And, once you become a black belt, you start teaching, after you've been a black belt for a few years. So, I started teaching kids when I was 14 years old, when I was a kid, right? So, I teach kids younger than me. So, I've been teaching kids and teaching people basically how to fight since I've been 14. And so, when I started boxing, I was going back and teaching people at my karate school, what I was learning myself And, you know, what I've not only learned from Johnny in training, but
Johnny
know,
Nava.
Yeah, Johnny Nava. But, you know, you obviously as a fighter, you're the one in there. So not only are you taking the advice that your coach is giving you or your trainers are giving you, but your actual experience and the lessons that you're learning, the painful lessons and sometimes the lessons of in victory. And, you know, and you listen to other trainers in the gym, right? And you see, you know who has the good fighters and who doesn't, right?
Pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's,
hey, you know, it's funny. I didn't interrupt you, but the old Newman's gym, you know, most of the guys on Newman's gym were opponents. You know that.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
Most of the guys. I mean, like Phil Rancatori, the guy that ran City Cab, he put guys that were like, in pro debuts against guys that were like 24 and zip.
Right.
I mean, and they didn't know. These guys had no idea.
And so you know, I tell people that all the time about professional boxing. The club level, the club scene, and it's a little different now because it's just not as vibrant as it was in your day. And then in my day, like, so I remember in the 80s, and, you know, in the late 80s all the way up through maybe the early 90s, there was, you know, a club show every month, right? At least every month. So probably when you were doing it, there was probably two twice a month at least, right? And so there's club shows. You know, one month would be in the city. Usually it'd be like Jimmy Sosa and Jimmy Keith. They'd put on a show. And then
San Jose.
And San Jose would be the next month, would be, you know, Joe Gilardi.
All
right.
So now that's gone. I mean, right. Gilardi doesn't, believe it or not, Gilardi moved like 2 months ago to Las Vegas.
No, I spoke to him. I saw him.
He's a godfather, you know.
Yeah,
I mean, no, pay-per-view. I mean,
oh, yeah,
closed-circuit television.
Yeah,
when I said it, I mean,
he
controlled the whole country. Him and Johan controlled the whole country on closed-circuit television back when closed-circuit was pay-per-view.
No, I know. That's how he. That's how he became
billionaire,
such a wealthy guy, right?
Yeah.
And so you know, I the last time I saw him was in Fresno, and he was managing Andy Ruiz at the time, and you know, Andy was there. And, you know, and so, yeah, he was doing really, you know, the last time I talked to Jeff Kermoja and everybody, too.
Yeah. So, Joe Gilardi, I talked to him on the phone about a month and a half ago. He says to me, I'm moving to Vegas. My sons are taking me to Vegas, blah, blah, blah. He sounded old. He sounded elderly, but he still sounded, you know, lucid, this and that. But, you know, here was a guy that I remember when Bomani Parker turned professional after the 1984 Olympic trials. He won the Olympic trials. Of course, he went crazy afterwards. But we had the kickoff thing, and Joe was there and everything. Like, and Joe was throwing money around, and I said to Joe, "You got so much money, why don't you sponsor my radio show? Put me on." He goes, "You don't have a radio show." I said, "If I had some money, I'd have a radio show." He goes, "I'll give you $4,000. Can you do it with that?" Here we are, 37 years
there
later.
There you go.
From Joe Gilardi's $4,000. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. You're inside looking to the world of boxing, MMA. I got to ask you this. Vasyl Lomachenko is going to take on Richard Comey December 11th in his comeback fight, of course, after the Teofimo Lopez fight. Larry Merchant was on in hour number one. He sort of was dismissive of Lomachenko because of the fact that he hadn't fought enough guys. He said that he didn't do enough. Is he right? Is there merit to what he's saying? Or is this Larry just
I mean, is he talking about it for the totality of his career?
Well, you know, well, 14-1-1. I think that's 15-1-1, I think, is his career. I think Larry is of the opinion you should have more than 17 fights to be considered like a super elite fighter.
I do agree with that somewhat. I do believe that he was heaped a lot of praise a lot earlier than a lot of fighters would have. But, you know, I mean, he had... He's, you know, arguably the best amateur of all time. So, you know, he deserved and he worked for a lot of that. So, save it.
You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Towers of the Break this time is real. After the break, we'll come up with some Muhammad Ali quips. Of course, you are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, the longest running fight show in history, Ring Talk Live Worldwide. I had a picture. You got that picture over there? Hand me the picture back. Anyway, I'm giving it primetime Eddie Crawford, one of my pictures here of myself and Muhammad Ali. If you'd like one, text me at 415-275-161. That's right. Me and Ali, 1993, and he signed it to Pedro, "Love Muhammad Ali." Guess what? You can look on the internet. You find another picture where he said love. Show it to me. You're tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
Pedro Fernandez and Primetime Eddie Croft, baby, of B Street Boxing down there in San Mateo, California. Of course, B Street Boxing, rocking and rolling. You have programs for kids, adults. Real quick, B Street Boxing, explain it.
I have it all.
I have it all. I love it.
Programs for kids, adults, young kids, 5 to 10, and kids 11 and up. So, you know.
And then I have a group for competitive, both kids and adults. You know, people want to try their hand at fighting.
Should everybody know how to fight? Should the squarest guy in Guya, some doofus guy, some lummox, should he know how to fight?
I don't know about necessarily knowing. Well, yeah, knowing how to defend themselves and knowing how to look. I always tell people, look, it's much easier to not get beat up than actually beat somebody up. Right, so
Pepper Joe.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're weaponless, right?
Okay.
You can defend yourself. You can learn to block and move and throw occasional punches. But in order to really beat somebody up, you have to put yourself out there. You have to it takes a lot more risk, right? So
you have to gamble.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know what Ray Leonard told me when we were sitting in a jacuzzi in 1989? We're in West Palm Beach, Florida for the Hearns fight, training for the Hearns fight, the rematch. And I said to him, Ray, what makes a great fighter? And he thought about it. He looked at me. He says, the willingness to gamble.
Absolutely. Gambling might be not the right
term. Taking risks.
But a huge risk, right? Because every time you step into the ring, it's a huge risk. You are actually risking your life, right?
Talk to me. Who's the guy you're training that's so hot, the super middleweight?
Evgeny Shevchenko.
We call him the Shiv?
Well, no. We call him Siberian Express.
Why don't you call him the Shiv? It sounds like a lot easier, the Shiv. The Siberian
Shiv.
Express, the Shiv? Sounds like he's a killer.
Because the Shiv has like prison, it implies
it
prison.
It has and negative connotations.
My kid has never been to prison.
Okay, so he's unbeaten.
Yep.
You keep telling me he's going to fight this guy.
Here we go. So hopefully 4 times a charm. He's been lined up to fight an IBF title eliminator, and we've had 3 fights fall through because of COVID.
With?
Huh?
Who are the fights?
So the first time was this guy, Idos Yurbasanuli, who I don't believe had COVID. I think he pulled out. He actually got a WBA eliminator fight against a much easier opponent, right?
Money, right. And opportunity.
So,
okay,
yeah.
Go on.
So, and then the second time was against Shishkin, who trains over at the Kronk.
But weren't you supposed to fight Callum?
So he got COVID, and then the third time, Caleb Truax. So Truax, he got COVID, and a guy in his camp. Or one of the coaches in his gym passed away from it, but he's recovered, and we re-signed, and now we're going to fight January 14th.
On another note, can you believe that people are resisting being vaccinated? I mean, what is this? What is the mindset behind that? I mean, I'm in my 60s now. I think you're in your 50s. We've both been through a lot of vaccinations in our life: polio vaccinations, measles vaccinations, things like that. If you take a flu shot every now and then. I mean, why all of a sudden are there so many people in this country that are anti-medicine? Politics?
You know what, Pedro? It's absolutely unexplainable to me. I don't know.
I mean, this is a get-out-of-jail-free card,
dude,
and they won't take it.
Dude, I don't know. And you know what? This is a whole nother, like, rabbit hole that that we can't really climb down at this
right.
moment.
December 5th, yeah. Isaac Cruz is going to take on Gervonta Davis, taking the Raleigh Romero's place.
Yep,
Raleigh Romero, of course, a serial creeper.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess we can say that, huh?
It's kind of creepy. Yeah,
it's kind of creepy.
I mean, if it's true, it's a little creepy.
But here's what somebody told me. Oh, it was only one chick. No, there were six.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah, when 6 or 7 chicks come forward on you, sort of like the first one. Well, they're coming from different cities.
Kind of
I mean,
weird.
Different zip codes.
And they all sound similar.
Similar, yeah, right, about the same thing. Gervonta Davis is going to take on Isaac Cruz. Isaac Cruz, formidable foe?
I mean, the guy can crack, but he's right there. You know, he's right there in front of you. And, yeah, he cracks, but he gets hit. And see, the thing about Gervonta, yeah, he's there in front of you too, but he doesn't really get hit that much. He's got, you know, he's got pretty good defense and you know, he's able to block and slip a lot of punches. And, man, when he cracks, man, you're feeling it. So,
a guy that we've known for a long time, 38 years old now, Nonito Donaire.
Yeah.
Remember, 7-7-07, July 7th, 2007, he knocks out Victor Archinian.
Yep.
Okay, for the IBF flyweight title. Yep. And Vic wakes up, and they said to him, hey, Vic, what's it like? Remember, they asked him, hey, Vic, what's it like to be knocked out? He goes, I wasn't knocked out. I wasn't even knocked out. What are you talking about?
Yep.
That's why you don't interview a fighter after you've been drilled.
That you know who else said that?
Who?
Remember Marlon Starling?
Marlon Starling didn't even know what happened.
He said the same thing when he, yeah.
Well, that Korean hit him after the belt. Was it the Korean?
No. It was like
Molinaris or one of those guys?
Yeah, I think it was,
Tomas Molinaris?
Yeah, I think that's who it was.
Yeah, listen, hitting after the bell is an art. I mean, some guys can do it and get away with it. For some reason, I've never felt that way. Like when the bell rang, it was cool to put your hands down. I never thought it was. It was
no.
Cool. It was cool to pull my hands down when I was out of, you know.
I learned that lesson. The thing is, at a place like Newman's Gym, you learn those lessons, right? Because you're sparring with guys that hate you. It's different, you know. I tell everybody now, boxing is different. You know, we're in a gym. You're at B Street Boxing, guys. And we're all together. We're all the same team, right? So when we're sparring, if we rock somebody, you know, we're gonna pull back and like kind of let them recover. We're not going in
for
the kill.
Dig to
right?
the body like I
no,
would.
No, so like you know, I tell them, you know, so when I went to Newman's and I was training, you know, everybody knew I came from San Mateo. I had a car. Half these guys didn't. You know,
I had a car.
I had I had money in like. You know, half the guys that were fighting, they didn't have anything, and they hated me, right? So,
dirt broke.
So every time I sparred, it was like a fight for my life, right? And, you know, I remember after a couple weeks in, you know, because I had never really sparred like that over and over and over, you know, growing up in karate. I remember a couple weeks in, I was like, man, you either are going to learn fast or you just aren't going to make it. In this sport, you know, so I see that actually the accelerated learning because you just have to fight so hard all the time, right? And
is that a better way to learn than the path that you're teaching right now? Do you think?
Hold on. That's what I wanted to kind of get into actually. So, you know, I learned that because of the super intensity of the training and the sparring that I either had to learn fast or I was quitting. And I decided that I, you know, wanted to be the best in the world at it, right? So, like, I was, you know, putting a lot of time into studying it and figuring out how it worked. Right. So
you and Hector, you guys study boxing. I never studied. It was a physical thing for me. In other words, the mental part was like overcoming somebody physically. Let me change subjects real quick. Tell me about your kids. We never talk about your kids. How many kids you got?
I have five.
Five kids. Busy young man.
Yeah. So my oldest is 27, okay. Alexandria. She was my first. And so when I was fighting, she used to be at all the fights when she was a baby. And then I got remarried. And then I have... my oldest son, McLean, he's 14, and then I have a son, Mosley, who I actually named after Sugar Shane Mosley. He's 13, and then I have a daughter, another daughter, Kaya, she's 10, and son Eddie, he's 8.
Okay, so any of them box?
No.
Why is it? Well, here's what's up. You and I come from a boxing background. Mm-hmm. I mean, without a doubt, we're boxing all the way back in martial arts, boxing, combat sports, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
We aren't all that. I don't push any of my relatives into it. I never push any. I just didn't. In other words, if you want to do it, you do it. I don't push more. I don't push combat sports on people. You feel me on that?
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't push. Well, my oldest son, McLean, he's autistic, so I didn't want him to get hit. And Mosley, you know, I wanted him to do it, and I still would want him to try it, even though he's 12, and it's good, it'd be okay time to start. But I mean, he's trained a little bit here and there, but nothing serious. If he doesn't, I want him to, because I know how much time and dedication it takes, right? So I want him to put that time and dedication to something that he loves.
Hopefully an education.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Wish your family the best. What's the website for B Street Boxing?
It's www.bstreetboxing.com. So B as in boy, street, spell the street out, boxing.
You know what, man? It's always a pleasure. We want to give you a Lifetime Achievement Award at the end of the year, so you got to come back, okay?
Hurry. Right on, Pedro.
All the best.
Thank you,
man. Primetime Eddie Croft, a great father, great community leader, great trainer. Listen, everybody talks so nicely about this guy because he deserves it. Not too many people in the world of boxing deserve it, let alone the people at large in the world. Straight up, Eddie deserves all the props he can get and more. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide on WBC TV.